It is Deborah Heart and Lung Center presents Dr. Joseph Guarino, who is a wonderful cardiologist at Deborah Heart and Lung Center. And we move this program a little bit. It's most oftentimes on the first Thursday of every month in the 9 o'clock hour. But according to, you know, the doctor's schedules, very busy. We move the program when need be. So we let you know if it's not going to be the first Thursday of a given month, we let you know that, you know, will be later in the month and when, so that you can plan, because this is a program that many of our listeners really enjoy, and it is presented and sponsored by Deborah Heart and Lung Center. Dr. Joseph Guarino is a cardiologist, board certified in cardiovascular disease. Dr. Guarino earned his medical degree from Universidad Católica Nordestana, UCNE, Faculty of Medicine in the Dominican Republic. After medical school, he completed a residency in internal medicine at Jersey Shore Medical Center in Neptune, New Jersey. Dr. Guarino went on to complete a fellowship in cardiology at the Medical College of Georgia in Augusta, Georgia. Specialty training, cardiology, Medical College of Georgia, Augusta, Georgia, and I mentioned his board certification. Dr. Guarino, we have a very important topic this half hour on Deborah Heart and Lung Center presents lifestyle and heart attack. Doctor, welcome. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you, Harry?
I'm doing great, and it's always a pleasure to do the program with you. Welcome back home, sir, and we'll get right into it. We'll start right off the bat. What is a heart attack? Of course, everybody hears, oh my gosh, somebody they know has had a heart attack, but what is a heart attack?
Heart attack is actually a decrease in the blood flow to the heart muscle, which causes damage to the muscle. People can have chest pains and things like that, which actually don't damage the muscle. But once the decrease in circulation is long enough, it can actually cause damage to the heart muscle and in turn can decrease heart performance, et cetera.
So when someone has a heart attack, by definition, does that mean that part of the heart muscle that's damaged, that part of the heart muscle has died or damaged?
Well, that it depends on it. It actually means that portion of the heart muscle died. Now, it can be a small amount. Heart attack begins on the inside lining of the heart and penetrates outward. If we catch it early enough and they get just a little bit of injury to the inside lining, then there's not really a significant reduction in the heart performance, because you kind of save the rest of the heart muscle all the way through. If it goes all the way through, that's what we call a completed heart attack. And then you lose that portion of the heart muscle. It stops moving. It forms a scar. The remainder of the heart muscle has to pick up that workload, if you will.
Wow.
So the bigger the heart attack is, the bigger the heart attack somebody has, the less muscle there is to pick up the slack, so to speak.
Is the heart...
And it's obviously...
Go ahead. Finish, please. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, heart attack is very common in the United States. About 805,000 people in the U.S. have a heart attack every year. Mm. So it's extremely common. 605,000 is the first heart attack. About another 200,000 of the patients who have had previous heart attacks.
If you have a heart attack,
it's extremely common.
If you have a heart attack, doctor, does that mean you are susceptible to having another heart attack? Or could you have one heart attack, maybe really focus on your health and do the right things and, you know, get with Dr. Guarino and do what you should be doing and then never have that happen again? Or are you really susceptible to future incidents?
Well, you're susceptible unless you make some changes, which may help to minimize your risk of developing more plaque in the arteries and things like that. as I mentioned, 200,000 patients in the U.S. have had a previous heart attack.
Yeah.
Out of 800,000, you know, so it's a common recurrent problem. Probably more likely that patients are unable to change their lifestyle or even can't change things like their family history, which may make them more prone to having a heart attack, things like that. There are certainly controllable risk factors which you have, you can have some effect on, and, you know, changing certain things or monitoring blood pressure and things like that, cholesterol, may reduce your risk of having another heart attack.
See, I was thinking about...
But you do see people with recurrence.
Right. I was thinking about how, for example, the liver can regenerate. Now, the heart, my understanding is, does not regenerate. So if you have a section of the heart that is damaged, the muscle is damaged, that the heart, though, has an ability to compensate, doesn't it? It almost like does miraculous things, because I guess the human body is so miraculous, the desire, the goal is to live. So the heart has an amazing capacity to pick up the slack, doesn't it, as you were talking about earlier?
Right. It certainly does. You know, the concern is how large a heart attack somebody has, because the more damage there is, there's less good heart muscle to pick up that workload. So that patients who have a large heart attack, say, to begin with, their first heart attack, and it's a large area of heart muscle that you lose, it can lead to other problems going forward, where the heart cannot compensate as nicely as you would like it to. But many times it does. People can have a small heart attack and not even be limited at all afterwards, because the rest of the heart muscle picks up that workload.
But a
large heart attack obviously compromises that ability more so.
We are visiting with Dr. Joseph Guarino from Deborah Heart and Lung Center, very talented cardiologist. We've done some amazing topics over the years with Dr. Guarino, holiday heart syndrome, which is something that you can actually visit the website and see Dr. Guarino talk about that, and when he discusses what holiday heart syndrome is. It's a program that we've done that time of year several times over the years. And a reminder to make an appointment. It is simple to do. You can phone 609-621-2080, or with any digital device, go to demanddeborah.org, and you will see the speed button tab, the hyperlink, to take you right to scheduling. So either digitally or by calling 609-621-2080, you can make an appointment with Dr. Guarino. If when you're listening to today's program, we hear from listeners that say, wow, you were speaking to me. I'm dealing with certain things that I hear you talking about. And that's why this program has been so powerful for more than three decades that we've been doing it, both the TV program and here on the Hurley in the Morning program, the radio edition. What are the symptoms of a heart attack? And I do want to point out that I've learned from you, men present differently than women. What are the symptoms that you can speak of?
Okay. Men typically present with more classical symptoms. They may be a heavy or oppressive feeling the center of the chest, or left-sided chest discomfort, but a heavier or tight feeling, which may radiate up to the neck or to the lower jaw area or to the left armpit area, usually brought on by either physical exertion of some form or emotional stress. You get into an argument with somebody, all of a sudden you're feeling a heaviness in the chest and with those radiating areas. It can be associated with shortness of breath, breaking out in a sweat, nausea. Those are fairly classical symptoms. They may last a few minutes, but if they're persistent, then you would worry that there's actually some damage going on.
Wow.
Now, women may present in a completely atypical fashion, meaning that they may have none of those symptoms. They may just feel tired, or they may feel exhausted to the point where they can't function normally in their normal routine. They may get short of breath. They may have those classical symptoms, but they're less likely to than a man. So in women, many times, years ago at least, diagnoses were missed because the woman would present just saying she felt anxious and a little short of breath, and wouldn't really complain of chest discomfort per se, and yet she was having a heart attack.
Wow.
So it's a little trickier in a woman, you know. So nowadays I think physicians are more attuned to that. If somebody presents to an emergency room looking for help, women particularly, they may be more likely to proceed with doing an electrocardiogram, doing certain blood tests, which will check for any acute injury to the heart, even though their symptoms may not be classical. And we'll see patients before they have a heart attack with similar symptoms, and we'll work them up because of that, because we're suspicious that they have some, perhaps have some blockage in the arteries that are giving them the symptoms, not to the point that they're having a heart attack, but just giving them what are called atypical angina symptoms. And then we would proceed from there.
The topic this half hour on Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents, Dr. Joseph Guarino, is lifestyle and heart attacks. So we've talked about, if you're just joining the program, we've talked about what a heart attack is. And Dr. Guarino just put a clinic on in terms of what the symptoms of a heart attack are. What are the physical health conditions and the different habits that can lead to a heart attack?
Probably the highest risk is involved with high blood pressure, hypertension, high cholesterol levels, and smoking. Those are probably the three greatest risk factors to develop plaque in the arteries, which can lead to a heart attack. They are obviously all controllable risk factors. You can control high blood pressure and cholesterol levels, and you can stop smoking if you're able to do that. But those are the three main risk factors. Others are diabetes. Obesity is a big problem, which is generally from a poor diet. Physical inactivity is a big issue. Excuse me. And while alcohol may be beneficial in certain circumstances, excessive alcohol may have negative effects. There's also family history, which you obviously have no control over.
Yeah.
But many of those risk factors you're able to do something about.
We are going to take the one and only break that we take. If you have more on that, we'll come right back to you, Dr. Guarino. After the break, you can continue with that if there is more to be said. From there, we're going to move on to daily habits that can improve your health and lead to a heart-healthy lifestyle. Sometimes we've done that as a full topic. Just the whole aspect of a heart-healthy lifestyle and what that can mean. I thought that was really value-added when you talked about all the things that we have a say in and the one area that we don't, our heredity. We have no control of that. Our parents are who they were and so on and so forth. So if there's ever anything that is something that I remember when I met Mickey Mantle and he talked about his dad and he talked about, you know, other people in his immediate family. And, you know, he thought he was going to have a very short life. He once said to me that I would have taken much better care of myself if I knew I was going to live as long as I did. He thought he was going to get the same type of widowmaker thing that hit most of his family, the male people, in the late 30s. And Mickey lived to be over 65 and I think would have lived a lot longer than that. So the heart-healthy lifestyle is huge. We're going to talk about that and more next with Dr. Joseph Guarino from Deborah Heart and Lung Center. A reminder to make an appointment with Dr. Guarino at Deborah Heart and Lung Center. You can call 609-621-2080. That's 609-621-2080 or on the web at demanddeborah.org. We'll be right back. Short break. We are back at 21 minutes past the hour with Dr. Joseph Guarino. This is Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents, Dr. Guarino. And the topic this half hour on Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents is lifestyle and heart attack. So I think we pretty well handled right before the break what Dr. Guarino was doing, so we can move on to the health and the heart-healthy lifestyle aspect of what that can mean. Wide-ranging, a lot you can share on this, Dr. Guarino. I turn it over to you. The time is yours.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I mean, the as I mentioned, the most serious risk factors are hypertension, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and smoking. So if you have high blood pressure, don't ignore it. The normal numbers, upper limit of normal, used to be considered 140 over 90 as far as blood pressure is concerned. In recent years, that number has been brought down by the experts around the country, likely because many people were not being treated as aggressively as they should have been. But 130 over 70 is now considered the upper limit of normal in blood pressure. So if your pressures are running higher much of the time, then that needs to be addressed for you, whether it's a limitation or a reduction in your salt intake. Doing physical activity can help with that as well. But many people need medication to bring that down. High cholesterol, same issue. If it's part of that may be hereditary. Your liver is producing too much cholesterol, but great many times it's due to dietary intake of saturated fats and foods that are high in cholesterol. So modifying diet and things may actually bring those numbers down. Again, if they don't, then medications are certainly available that, beyond just lowering the numbers, actually stabilize plaque, which may already be in your arteries. And smoking, obviously, is a big risk factor. Difficult to give up. You know, I talk to patients all the time about it. They've been smoking for many years. You know, they don't want to give it up. But it's a tremendous risk factor. It accelerates the heart rate. It thickens the blood. Drops oxygen levels. It does everything, which is a setup for a heart attack. So if you're able to stop smoking, that would be great. Diabetics obviously have to monitor their diet and take medications if necessary. Obesity is a big problem in the country, obviously, and that's likely due to bad diet and inactivity. So adjusting your diet, there's hundreds or thousands of diets out there that you can look up that are heart-healthy diets, basically, low in saturated fats and things like that. But combining that with some physical activity, and it doesn't have to be a lot initially, but you want to gradually incorporate physical activity on a daily basis if possible. And that could be just a simple thing as walking. You know, if you're just sitting on the couch all the time, that's not good for you. You got to move and you got to keep that circulation moving. You know, and physical activity certainly is a way to do that. And watching your diet and things combined with that will tend to lower cholesterol levels as well. Alcohol intake is actually very beneficial in small amounts. Once you get beyond the small amounts, then there are the negative effects of alcohol. But alcohol can have some cardioprotective effect as well. I tell patients all the time, a man can have 2 glasses of wine a day, a woman can have 1. And that's kind of a generality. But alcohol in those small amounts can actually be very beneficial, keeping people out of trouble.
Dr. Guarino, isn't the challenge that so many of the things that people enjoy are not good for us? I mean, we want to eat rich foods and people like to slather butter all over stuff, you know, and probably drink too much and eat right. The wrong foods and all. Do you find that once someone, though, visits with you and they see their current circumstances and they realize, hey, if I stay on this current track of being very sedentary, eating all the wrong stuff, smoking and drinking too much and all of that, that I'm going to dramatically shorten my life. Do you sense that people get that sense of urgency and are willing to make the appropriate lifestyle changes?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's difficult for some things. You know, they initially, particularly after somebody comes in with a heart attack, say it's not a severe heart attack, but it's a milder or a smaller one, they're obviously inclined to start to do things to help their health situation and try to minimize the risk of having a recurrent heart attack. But it's difficult. You know, so I tell people that, you know, the cardiologist diet is, if it tastes good, spit it out. But I say that kiddingly to them. But they can. I tell them to, you know, modify their diet, but do it, you know, kind of gently and slowly. Don't rush in and change your diet completely all of a sudden, or you're not going to stick with it. Make subtle changes, small changes, but there's, again, hundreds of diets out there that are beneficial. The Mediterranean diet has been looked at as probably the most cardiac benefit. And that can be looked up anywhere online or in books, I'm sure, on it. That incorporates more vegetables and things like that into the diet. And you stay away from some red meats and all that kind of thing. Again, the saturated fat in the red meat is where the problem is. And the more that you put that in your system, the greater risk of elevating cholesterol levels, et cetera, and potentially forming plaque in the arteries. So making those modifications certainly can be helpful. So no smoking, a little alcohol, watching the fats in the diet, those are all things that you can do to kind of protect yourself from either worsening your situation or prevent yourself from having an initial heart attack.
It's not a coincidence that for years and years and years, it always seemed that the Japanese had very low heart disease relative to, mm-hmm. you know, Western, you know, folks like us over here. and that was their, you know, fish oil, and their diet was lean and all of that. It really does prove the point, doesn't it? Because I understand that their eating habits have gotten worse, and they now have things that they didn't used to have, it seems.
That's true. Actually, it was known for some time, if a Japanese person moved to the United States and started eating American diet and things like that, their incidence of heart attack rose dramatically. If they remained in Japan and ate the foods they were eating there and the lifestyle they had there, their incidence of heart attack was very low. So that just the change in circumstance increased their risk substantially. But they did seem to be protected by their Japanese lifestyle and diet and all that type of thing.
Very interesting. This, I think, is a big deal. That's just me saying it as a layperson. You would know best as our expert, our doctor. But I think that America is now more sleep-deprived than ever, and that lack of quality sleep is also creating situations with damage to the heart, isn't it?
Yes, I believe it certainly is. You know, I mean, that adds to your body's inability to regenerate cells and things like that if you're not sleeping as long, and just the rest on the muscles, et cetera, et cetera. You need to have those things. If you're having short hours of sleep, then you don't allow the body a chance to recover, if you will, and thereby putting yourself at greater risk when you go about your daily activities the next day. You haven't let the body have a chance to recover from the previous day. And it adds greater stress on the body, which in turn, the stress can accelerate processes that will tend to form plaque in your arteries and things like that. So stress reduction and rest are very, very important. And many times we ignore those things, you know, because the American lifestyle is such that we're always on the go, we're always doing something, we're always busy, we're always, you know, working and dealing with the family, et cetera, et cetera. So it doesn't allow us an opportunity to kind of, you know, regain our strength, if you will, and reduce our risks by modifying our lifestyles. But it's a very hard thing to change, obviously.
Do you ever, I know that they say that everybody's different. Some people need 8 hours. Some people want to sleep more than that. Some people say, hey, I do just fine on 6. Do you have a recommendation on the number of hours that someone should sleep each night?
Yeah, I mean, I used to have much less sleep than I actually get now, but 8 hours is probably a reasonable number if you're able to do that. But I used to function on 5 and 6 hours sleep for years, you know. Not that it was good for me, but just being a physician, you're awakened during the night and you've gotten up early, et cetera, et cetera. But if you're able to get 8 hours of sleep a night, that's probably most beneficial for you. Relieves stress, really allows your body a chance to recover.
Yeah, this next question I think is going to be very interesting for our listeners to hear you talk about, because you've talked about the symptoms, you've talked about even heredity, you know, that we have no control of that, but obviously we're directly, impacted by that. And that areas we do have say in terms of what we actually put into our bodies, the food we eat, if people smoke, and all these things that you eloquently talked about. Here's another area. I mean, if your job is where your job is, the environment is something, I guess in some cases you can address your environment, but does environment have an impact on your heart health?
Yes, it certainly can. As you mentioned, you know, people have very stressful jobs and things like that that they're not really able to change. You know, it's just the nature of the work they may do. But people handle stress differently as well, so that some people thrive on that stress, you know, and the fast-paced activity in their work and things like that. And you take them out of that and they have negative consequences. But overall, if it's, you're under a stressful situation at work on a constant level, that can be detrimental to your health. So you may not be able to change that dramatically because that's maybe the nature of your work. So look to other areas that you have control over. Try to get a little more rest and watch your diet a little more carefully and exercise when you can. All those other things may protect you where you can't get out of that stressful environment of work because that's just the nature of your work. So doing things like that may benefit you. It's just like heredity. You can't change it, but, you know, you do the other things that you have some power over to help minimize your risk. And you drink a little bit. That helps too sometimes.
Can depression or stress, we'll make this a standalone question, although I know you have addressed stress well during the half hour, but can depression or stress cause heart disease or heart attacks?
It's a good thing I have a degree in psychology too, you know.
Yes, sir.
But the stress, I think, more so. Depression, perhaps, you know, but the a stressful situation certainly can accelerate the processes that tend to form plaque in your body. You know, depression can lead to other things, but the stressful situation is probably more likely to produce a vascular disease. You know, but psychological components of that can add or worsen your situation. If you're depressed, you're less likely to be physically active. You're less likely to get out there and do things, so that you're leaving yourself open for plaque formation just because you're inactive and not wanting to go out and interact with other people, et cetera, et cetera. So those processes certainly have their negative impact. Excuse me.
What do you say, Dr. Guarino, to this is just a general, because everybody is different and you deal with each, you know, patient as you know, the individual circumstances. But generally speaking, when you're talking to somebody and you have to share with them that, hey, there is damage to your heart muscle, here's where it is, you know, this isn't going to work anymore. If it is that kind of, you know, situation that you have to break that kind of news, and here's, you know, what you know, I think you should do going forward. I imagine that is very tough stuff for someone to listen to, even if they are a contributing factor because they didn't do a lot of the right things. It's still a very shocking reality when someone hears, oh my gosh, I've had a heart attack and I've got damage to my heart muscle, and they start thinking about, is this going to affect how long I'm going to live and all that. What do you say to people, generally speaking, that have to deal with picking up the pieces of where they are now?
Yeah, well, obviously I have to lay it out for them what has happened and how much damage they have had to the heart already, and whether there's indications that there may be other problems that we should address directly with the heart, you know, other areas of decreased circulation, things like that. Do they need a stent? Do they need bypass surgery, et cetera, et cetera? So we get into all of those things, particularly after someone has had a heart attack, you know, to try to minimize the risk of something happening again. And as I mentioned, initially, people are motivated to try to do things to help themselves, but we got to kind of help to keep them on track. Or they'll get back into the same situation that led to their first heart attack. And then the amount of damage that may have occurred may lead to other things like heart failure, which is another whole topic, which is the number one admitting diagnosis to hospitals in the United States for people of Medicare age. And heart failure is a complex topic, but that is some other area that we many times have to deal with. And we now have much better treatment for that with regards to medications and things like that to treat heart failure. But depending on the extent of the damage, it may lead to things like heart failure that are put patients at greater risk. So we need to deal with those things as well and try to encourage them to take their medications and to watch their diet and do all those things that will protect them going forward for as long as we can. And we're very successful much of the time. But we need the patients to jump in and take care of themselves as well.
I want to give Dr. Guarino a bonus question. He's agreed to stay for about 2 minutes of overtime here this morning, which I really appreciate. And I was thinking all this half hour for some reason that Dick Cheney, for example, and I don't get political at all during DeBoer Heart and Lung Center, and this is not either. He just happens to be someone that's been chief of staff and congressman and vice president and all that, defense secretary before that. So he had his first heart attack when he was in his 30s. Meat grinder jobs, anybody will tell you, anybody that's been a chief of staff for a president of the United States, I mean, it is just, you're the gatekeeper. It is stress 24/7. I mean, you know, if you got something that's you know, at all weak, you know, it's going to prey on, you know, any weakness that you have, the kind of meat grinder jobs that he has had during his lifetime. But he had his first heart attack in his 30s. And the man lives today and has been through all kinds of things, heart pump and all kinds of things. I guess what I'm saying is, if you have a heart attack, is it a fair statement that it does not necessarily have to be a death sentence?
Oh, absolutely. And there's that's a perfect example of it. You know, you may have to modify certain things about your lifestyle so that you can minimize the risks where you can minimize them and not produce another event. But it doesn't mean you have to go sit in a corner and not do anything. That's the worst thing you can do. We want people to get, even after a heart attack, get back to a normal lifestyle. That's our whole purpose. You don't want it to just now not do anything. That's even worse for them. So you want them to, you know, make modifications in what they're doing lifestyle-wise, dietary-wise, et cetera, and take medications that they may need to take. And some people are just resistant to taking medications. But they may need them to keep them alive. So we try to stress those points to them and make it clear to them that you need this to help prevent you from having another event occur, which may be your final event. We don't want them just going home and sitting at home all the time and not doing anything. That's the worst. That's no life for anybody.
No.
We want them to try to get back to a more normal lifestyle, or as normal a lifestyle as they possibly can.
And if you chose the former and not the latter, that would actually bring you the result you don't want. You would not live as long, because all the things that you would be offering would be for someone to not only extend their lifetime, but the quality of their life.
Absolutely, yeah, and that's what we want for people. We want them to enjoy life and be able to get back and enjoy their families and their normal activities and things like that as much as they possibly can. So everything that we do is aimed at trying to get them there, whether it's a heart pump or a transplant or whatever it is. Our aim is to let them to live longer with as normal a lifestyle as they possibly can, and many of those treatments are very, very successful. So if they have a heart attack, don't. It's not the end of the world. We have a lot of things we may still be able to offer them to keep them going and to keep them in as good a possible shape as we can.
And that's a great way to conclude our program. We have been visiting with Dr. Joseph Guarino, a very talented cardiologist, a great man, at Deborah Heart and Lung Center to make an appointment, because this is something that if you're dealing with certain things, you know, don't ignore. Give our friends at Deborah a call, 609-621-2080 to make an appointment, and you can do so as well digitally on the web at demanddeborah.org. You know this to be true because I've said it in the past. I love doing the show with you, Dr. Guarino, and it's so important, the information that you impart. Thanks for your time today.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure.
Great to be with you. Until we meet again, Dr. Guarino.